Welcome to Null Signal Station. This is Sanjay. My pronouns are he, him. I'm joining you here from Delaware in the United States. And this is the Ampere special episode. We also have Ginevra. Ginevra, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you, Sanjay. I'm Ginevra. My pronouns are they or she, and I'm in Australia, which might turn out to be relevant for this episode because we're talking about online tournaments a little bit. I'm just wondering, what have you been doing recently with Netrunner? Have you been playing any Ampere?
I would say if you had asked me at any other time in the last year, the answer would be, yes, I've been just playing Ampere. I love Ampere so much. I recently got into playing Atea. I really enjoy Atea, and now I've just been playing Atea. Cool. Yeah, that's mainly what I've been doing with Netrunner lately. I went to a lovely team tournament called Sovereign of Subways, where... Cool. I picked up Atea because I think my team wanted to do well, so they didn't want me to play Ampere. my friend, who also does really well, probably would have gotten jealous if I was playing Ampere because she also likes Ampere quite a lot.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
What have you been doing lately in the Netrunner space?
I haven't been playing so much. I did run an online circuit opener in the period between Christmas and New Year, which is kind of a quiet period here, and I knew I'd be able to do that then, and that was lots and lots of fun. And also, I guess this time of year, because we're gradually moving towards the next set release, it's actually quite busy for the parts of Null Signal games that I work in. So there's like stories starting to be prepared, there's like names, there's like flavor text, there's like artwork reviewing, so there's like actually there's really a lot going on. And whenever I look at the Null Signal games Discord, like there's so many channels with every like all sorts of things to do and talk about and check throughout them. So yeah, for me it's a rather busy time of the year.
I guess speaking of stories in the Netrunner space, I think one of the sort of initial seeds for the idea of doing an Ampere episode was wanting to highlight, just in general, to highlight some of the narrative work we've done. And especially we have some absolutely wonderful pieces by Shoeflower. And she wrote a really excellent Ampere piece, which we'll be featuring today.
Yeah, it's a bit special because I got to see a little bit of the development process and kind of editing and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing her. She's going to read it, I think. And actually, Sanjay, do you want to tell us all the things that are going to happen in this episode? Because it's a bit different to usual.
Yeah, I would love to. So we have a jam-packed episode for you today. We have Shoeflower to read her lore piece that she wrote, Shredded Nerves, about Ampere. We also have an interview with Vale, who has put on two now Ampere versus Nova tournaments. So we have a chat with him about tournament organization and why those kind of tournaments are important. That's a really nice conversation. We're going to also be checking in with my friend Xeroth Maxima, host of the Shadow Net, to talk about Netrunner bake-offs, specific Ampere-themed bake that I made for his competition, and touching on some other topics. We also will have an interview with Shoeflower talking about her piece and some of the other things about being a writer and get the hot Ampere gossip. And lastly, in addition to the news, Cephalopod Wizard is joining us for some Ampere-focused rules questions. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. And now we present Shredded Nerves, Content warning, this story does contain body horror and some coarse language.
Another day, another damn meeting, thought Veronique Sayed as her pad pinged her a reminder. She exited her office and passed through the rows of designers sketching out blueprints for new cybernetics. The younger engineers were busy chatting with each other, discussing technical problems and solutions. The older ones wished her good luck. Shirin Toussaint, the bald and bearded team oddball who used to be her mentor in cybernetic synaptic interfaces, patted her on the back.
We've been through worse. You'll get us through it.
She tried to smile. Don't worry about me. Get back to work. Veronique was the only member of the board of directors whose office wasn't on the top floor of Ampere. As chief technical officer, she enjoyed being shoulder to shoulder with her fellow engineers and designers. But lately, it just meant that these board meetings were extra arduous. She had to cross over to Building C, walk down two long hallways, and take the lifts to the boardroom. She didn't mind it when the board meetings were fortnightly, but in the last week they'd had 8 such meetings. When the lifts opened up at the top, she saw that half the board, the rest of the old guard, were standing outside the doors waiting for her. In contrast to the practically dressed technicians downstairs, they were all dressed in high-quality suits of classical fashion, all reflective glasses and sharp angular waistcoats with ties under their jackets. Veronique herself favored a similar style, but her half-shaved head exposing the cybernetics installed into her cerebral membrane stem gave her a dash of modern flair. Everyone knew today was going to be a long, hard slog. The old guard fell in lockstep behind her to the boardroom. Inside, the young punks, as Veronique had named them in her head, were already sat there waiting. They were led by Mohamed Eclanché, the chief marketing officer, looking trendy in a modern one-piece, mixing circular motifs with sharp triangular epaulettes. There were recent additions to the board of directors, brought on to help Ampere's transition from strictly medical-grade cybernetics into more fashionable, discretionary commercial ones.
"You're 5 minutes late," started Mohamed, before anyone on Veronique's team had a chance to sit down.
"Please, please, let's not start the hostilities this early. Can we at least pretend to get some work done before we get to that part?" Veronique willed her voice and temper to remain even.
"If you were serious about getting work done, maybe you should have showed up on time."
Veronique sighed and conceded the point. "Fine, fine, you're right. We've adjusted this budgetary meeting 6 times now. We're all here, and I'd like to get this finally finished. Can we please get this over with?" Finally, Veronique found time to take her seat. The board secretary, an old KS3573R model bioroid named Carol, gave a brief recap of where the board had left off and began taking notes. It wasn't long before the sniping began anew. "We estimate that the development of the BS4K VJs will take about 15 months and cost 1.5 billion credits.
"C'est insupportable," interrupted Mohamed, and several of his team members muttered approvingly.
"We didn't ask for opinions yet," said Veronique curtly, and she motioned at the speaker to continue.
"No, no," interrupted Mohamed again. "This project is a complete disaster. We can't fund it as is."
Veronique took the bait. "Why not?"
15 months to release a new product? We need a rapid release cycle to build up a customer base, or else no one will recognize our name. Cybernetics division has a new line out every 6 months. They're even selling directly to chop shops and chrome parlors these days. We need to be matching that at a minimum.
"I don't give a shit what CD is doing. We don't have the resources to keep that kind of pace. Even if we did, have you seen the latest cybernetic they put out? It's barely functional proprietary garbage that bricks after 6 months.
It doesn't matter how good you think their product is. They've posted record sales last quarter. If there are technical problems, we can patch fixes in after we've sold them.
We can't just sell people body parts on the promise they'll be good eventually. People are connecting this product directly to their endocrine system. If these sense glands trigger an adrenal overdose, users could die." Veronique was yelling now.
"Well, we can't approve a budget for a money pit. No one is going to buy.
This is our flagship line of cybernetics. Our reputation is built on quality. What will people think if they buy our products and they don't work?
People need limbs and organs that work. These aren't VR games we're selling. This product is a financial and marketing disaster. Change it or we walk. Absolutely not. Get your head out of your arsehole. Fine. Mohammed looked at all the young punks on his side of the table. We're done with this meeting. As one, they stood and walked out. Fils de pute, you can't be fucking serious. As soon as Mohammed's team exited the room, Carol intoned flatly, "This meeting no longer meets quorum mandated by Ampere's corporate bylaws. The meeting is adjourned."
Veronique sat fuming in her office trying to check her biometrics from her own synth gland to make sure her adrenaline levels were within safe ranges, but she kept thinking about Mohammed's smug face and how much she'd like to punch it. After a while, Shirin came in and asked her how the meeting went and if she were willing to give the go-ahead on the firmware updates on the latest Zenit chips. Veronique snapped and swore at Shirin and sent him scurrying from the office. After Shirin left, she wished he would come back in so she could apologize, but she also wished someone else would come in with a stupid request so she could bite their head off, too. Clearly, everyone in the office got the message because no one knocked at her door for the next couple of hours. Veronique decided that she'd be better off going home early today and was just packing up her things when her pad started pinging. She ignored it at first, thinking it was just some of the senior engineers under Shirin sending sympathy, but the beeps and vibrations came faster and faster until Veronique was snapped out of her poor mood by curiosity and concern. Something major has just happened. Veronique opened her pad and hadn't even started checking the messages when multiple calls came in. She prioritized the one from her secretary, Julien Dupéry. He was smart and capable and was usually on top of everything that was going on that she didn't have time to concern herself with. "What the hell is going on out there?" she asked. "It's Guillotière South Hospital." Veronique's stomach dropped. That was Ampère's flagship hospital, where they debuted their latest bionic limbs and prostheses. They got hit by a runner attack. All virtual systems are locked down and they're demanding a ransom to reinstate. It's bad. How bad? The ransom or the damage? Something in Veronique twinged. Later, she would remember to be ashamed that Julien had had to ask her that. "Forget I asked. Get in here. We need to divert everyone in the office to helping GSH get back online, even if that means we have to pay. I have wasted too much time on these damn internal disputes." The attack was throwing the childishness of her actions of this morning into sobering relief. "Oh, and Julien, before you come in, send me everything we have on Mr. Eclanché." She closed the pad call. It was going to be a long evening trying to get this mess under control, but after that, she was going to have a conversation with Mohammed. Veronique's hopper alit on the private lily pad outside Mohammed's seaside villa. The hopper sat there, silent, as she put on her gloves and smoothed her jacket over her skirt, readying for the confrontation. "Breathe. You can do this." She disengaged the door locks and walked out onto the pathway leading to the main house. Mohammed's architectural sensibilities were surprisingly classical and tasteful. She had pegged him for an Art Numérique fan after his mid-century geometric suits that he wore, but his two-floor private dwelling was a beautifully restored Hadidist mansion. It was all elegant curves and seamless integration with nature. The walkway joined with the main building as naturally as a limb connected to the torso. Mohammed opened the front door and greeted her on the walk-in. "Veronique, what are you doing here at this late an hour? Aren't you going to invite me in?"
"Of course, of course. My Nissa didn't recognize your hopper idea. I thought you were a burglar."
Veronique shrugged and pretended to shiver as Mohammed led her into the house. The inside of Mohammed's house was a bit closer to what she had expected, a much more contemporary style, but it didn't overpower the vintage architecture. Mohammed offered to take her coat and gloves. Veronique simply shook her head.
"Can I get you a drink at least?"
"Yes, coffee." She tapped her head where the synth gland was installed. "Decaf." The two of them went to the kitchen. Mohammed offered Veronique a seat, but she declined, opting to stand awkwardly. They stood quietly in the kitchen. Mohammed waiting for Veronique to explain what was so important she had to come here in person, and Veronique shifting uncomfortably, waiting while Mohammed fiddled with his retrovasseur vacuum brewing system. When at last he handed it to her, she began, "Tonight, we're going to have it out. Just the two of us. We're going to get over our personal problems and start running this business like adults. I didn't spend the last 8 hours debugging hacked hospital equipment for us to waste time infighting. I don't care if I have to stay here all night or handcuff myself to your door, but we're solving this. Mohammed sighed.
No.
Veronique scarcely paused. Let me tell you what this company means to me. I've worked with cybernetics all my life. I know the people who design these things, and I know the people they go into. These are real people, terrified of putting foreign tech into their bodies, terrified of neural interface rejection. Have you been to Guillotière? Have you seen some of the walk-ins we get? Mohammed shook his head. Veronique continued. Back when I was a junior engineer, I was there every night assessing the damage done to people by faulty cybernetics, trying to see what parts of them we could salvage. You haven't felt like a monster until you have to yank a child's eyes out because a cheaply manufactured replacement was outputting slightly too high electrical impulses, gradually frying the kid's whole frontal lobe. And you really don't believe yourself to be a monster until you've told 50 different parents the same damn thing, until the company eventually issued a recall and settled the class action. She paused, trying to regulate her emotions and not let herself get too worked up. You've gone from startup to startup, and I've followed your work. You've done great. You leave companies richer, greener, and more successful, but here, that's not how I measure success. I measure it in years added to a person's life from an artificial heart, and that number goes down every time we have to operate on them. We need to make money to keep ourselves afloat, but we're not in the business of making money. We're in the business of taking care of people's bodies, and we can't cut and subdivide them and say that arm isn't profitable to us anymore, or we're no longer offering support for that spine. That would make us butchers, and I won't become that. So if I need to bang on your door at midnight and argue with you till morning to keep this company aligned, so be it. Veronique paused, one hand held behind her back, the other bracing herself on the ledge of the marble kitchen island. Well, she asked, are you willing to work this out with me? Mohammed sighed.
My turn. I get where you're coming from, Veronique, so let me show you where I'm coming from. I graduated 9th of my class at Sorbonne Grande. Phenomenal by any reasonable person's standards, but still not good enough to land a permanent gig at any of the major financial institutions. Instead, I'm down here in the trenches, managing startup after startup, and let me tell you, it is kill or be killed out here. I need to go from success to success, because if I fuck up even once, if something I touch turns out to be anything less than solid platinum, I'm done in this industry.
Mohammed started pacing back and forth across his wide kitchen.
A couple months ago, I went back and looked up how the rest of my graduating class were doing, and you know what? More than half of them are swimming in poverty amid the flotsam of STEM addictions and broken families. For people like us, rich and successful as we are, there's a line, and if we fall below that even once, we're dead meat. And that line is nothing short of perfection. That's why I have to make this succeed.
The two of them stared at each other. Mohammed slumped his shoulders and looked away.
But I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this life. I'm sick of the rat race. Sick of building my entire life around keeping above that line, continued Mohammed. If you're willing to make this work as a permanent institution, a bastion that will last, I can stop worrying about when failure will finally catch up to me. It'll be rough. As soon as the giants know we're not interested in selling, no matter the cost, they'll start trying to kick our fort down. You seem like the kind of person that can stand up to giants, though.
Veronique visibly relaxed and dropped both arms to her side. Thank you, she said. They spent the next hour hammering out the key details while their coffees grew cold, forgotten, what they would refuse to compromise on, what they could have some wiggle room, and where they could actually make money to keep themselves afloat. Eventually, Mohammed glanced at his pad and realized it was past 2 a.m., and Veronique agreed that they could put a pin in things there. He saw her to the door, they exchanged bisous, and Veronique walked back up the pathway to her hopper.
Take me to 92 Rue Paradis, please, she enunciated clearly to the Hopper's AI, knowing that it didn't have her vocal cadence imprints or saved locations. Veronique sighed, letting out all of the tension in her body as she leaned over, removed the Scorpio's PD-01 light pistol from its uncomfortable position in the waistband of her skirt, and stowed it in the glove compartment.
Hello, this is Sanjay again. I am here with Aaron Chalofsky, pronouns she, her, aka Shoeflower. Aaron is a staff writer for No Signal Games. She wrote Shredded Nerves, and I am delighted to have her on here to talk about her story and some other stuff. Aaron, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also, of course, thank you for recording the story. I had actually asked you to. I've been wanting to feature your writing and, you know, the writing, the wonderful narrative pieces that we have for a while. Shredded Nerves is a favorite of mine. I had kind of put it to you hey, would you like to read something, one of your pieces for the podcast? And I was delighted that you picked Shredded Nerves because it's my favorite.
Yeah, it was one where I feel like I was a bit more experimental with the story style.
Yeah, yeah. I should actually back up and ask just about you. If you could talk a little bit about who you are, tell us about your relationship with the Netrunner community, talk about your story.
Yeah, so my relationship with the Netrunner community, I've been playing Netrunner since FFG made it publicly available in 2012. Long time supporter. I was big into L5R back in the day, and which is how I got kind of like my narrative bent to things. But my L5R friends, once they heard that Netrunner was getting rebooted, they were like, you have to try this game. It's the best card game. And so, like, once the core set was, they didn't go to Gen Con, they didn't get those ones, but they got, like, once it first hit stores, they got the core set, and I played, and I was hooked.
So you were playing L5R from the first edition of it?
Yes, AEG's L5R.
Got it.
I like to call the FFG version L6R.
I like that. And within the Netrunner community, you've made, I think, a pretty big splash. I think you're both a really good competitive player. You have some really impressive competitive bona fides.
Yeah, I have top 16'd at Worlds twice, which is one of the achievements I'm most proud of, at least like playing competitively. I've won numerous like store champions and regional championships, come second in national level championships, but never could really clinch a big tournament like that, unfortunately.
I mean, I think you have won a big tournament, I would say. I'd say you're a world champion with your Akamatsu Memchip.
Yes, that's the real important thing here is that I did win the Bake Off World Championship and was subsequently prejudiced against by the judges for the next year.
For people's background, Aaron very boldly the year after she won submitted a wonderful entry, I think, but just absolutely flaunting the rules of the competition, saying that do you remember what you exactly said?
Yeah, I said that I was due a deferential treatment as the previous year's championship, which the Bake Off judges refused to acknowledge.
And I did appreciate you being disqualified, because that was the year I got second place, and I don't think I could have snuck in there if not for a lot of competition being disqualified.
Well, it was a really fun cake to bake, though, actually.
Yeah, that was a Pravdivost cake, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. And why don't we switch gears to talk about the other big contribution, the reason we have you on here. Your writing. You've written so much wonderful stuff in Netrunner space. In case people aren't familiar, Erin has written the Ampere story. Do you want to actually highlight what you've done?
Sure, yeah. So I've written four pieces for NSG now. I wrote the Isuak story, the Ampere story,
I did look at it, so I didn't want to turn this into a memory thing. I'm sorry. I think you've gotten six.
The other Jinteki one.
Because Regenesis about Isuak, yes. Shredded Nerves, Broken Bodies.
The intro fix for
You wrote how Arisana got her groove back.
Yes.
Which you coined that.
How Arisana got back in the groove.
Oh, back in the groove. Oh, that works even better. Nice.
Yes.
did you coin bad beats, or was that somebody else on
I
the narrative?
I did coin bad beats.
Oh, thank you for that, by the way. that's, of course, the nickname for Arisana's partner, Beatrice, who has a last name. Anyway, and To Catch a Psychic, which is incredible, and The Legend of Two-Bite Ike, which is incredible. They're all incredible. But we're here on the Ampere special. Let me ask you about how did you write the Ampere? Tell me about the process of writing the Ampere story.
The Ampere story. I had a lot of free reign leverage, space to explore with the Ampere story. There were no execs that were named. There were no, like, they really gave me a lot of space to play with. The only considerations was that, one, this is a company that is French and manufacturing, Cybernetics. And that they wanted this to be not a sympathetic corporation, but a bit grayer on this, a bit of a lighter shade of gray, as is befitting a neutral card.
Yeah, it's very fun how, if you are looking, I mean, I think the way you write it, just you can be like, I'm the good guys. I'm on pair.
And certainly they think of themselves as the good guys. And that's kind of the balance I was trying to strike with that story. You can't just write like, oh, everything was happy and wonderful, and these people were wonderful people putting out wonderful products, end of day, because that's not a very interesting story. So it was trying to find the grains of sand in the oil.
Yeah, that makes sense. What was the seed of thinking of having a runner attack as part of the plot of the story?
All right. So full disclosure, there's been a lot of rumblings on GLC or Stim Slack about how kind of under NSG the runners have been a bit more good. And I had previously been kind of an exponent, not a hard exponent, but a soft exponent of that. I'm really sure I'm using the wrong word there, but
proponent?
Proponent. That's the word I'm looking for. I had felt that. So I wanted to have kind of like a really dickish runner move. And I remember I was in a hospital for like a routine appointment. And when I was checking in at the desk, I noticed that they had an infographic posted for the employees sitting at the desk being like, here's what a malware attack looks like. Don't click on these things. And that got me thinking about like, what kind of asshole would do a malware attack on a hospital? I was like, yeah, you know what? That's a good character. I want to put that character in the story.
Yeah, I love how, and I think it's impressive how you made the story where the objective is, actually, Ampere's morally gray and does a lot of good things while putting so much tension and so much drama into a story that's like, this is Ampere. We make some nice products.
Yeah. So doing my research for Ampere, I did a lot of research into kind of more socially conscious, more companies that were more interested in stakeholders rather than shareholders. And I think that was kind of what gave me the inspiration for the main character. Oh my goodness, I can't even remember my child's name.
Oh, Veronique?
Veronique, yes.
Yeah, actually, related to that, you said that was your creation and not something that they gave you. And I think between Veronique Sayed and Mohamed Eclanche,
yeah.
Those are two fun characters now that exist. And this might be something that, do you think there's any chance of them coming back?
Yeah, I've been pushing for design to make like a neutral corp asset that I can put Veronique's face on. Hopefully we'll see that sometime soon. But certainly my boss at Narrative has been like, yeah, that's a good idea. We want to remind people of Ampere. Like, we don't want to just like one and done Ampere. So expect little bits of Ampere to pop up every now and then again, hopefully in the form of a card for Veronique. And, you know, barring me actually winning Worlds instead of just top freeing it, that's my best chance of getting my own card.
Yeah, this isn't a question. I just wanted to share something about your story that I think reading your story made me psyched to play Ampere. Like, between reading your story, I was just like, this is the corp I'm going to play again and again and again and again. I think something about how you fleshed out that world and really made me want to play the card.
It's funny you should mention that, because after I did the recording of the story, I was like, I really feel like playing some Ampere now.
Yeah. I think you've touched on this a little bit already, but I think one of the other corps I love so much is Atea, which you also wrote the fiction for. Yes. I exclusively play Aaron Chalosky's corp narrative corpse now. I think one thing that those two stories have in common is that they just are very good. What do you think goes into making a good corp narrative?
Making a good corp narrative is writing a good runner narrative and a good corp narrative are tricky in two different ways. For the corpse, the problem is, I mean, we do kind of see them as the bad guys. And I do try and kind of challenge that view that they're just, you know, like Saturday morning cartoon villains that we're here to punch. But at the end of the day, they are for the most part, they are the antagonists. So you have to write a story where they have a challenge and they succeed, but it doesn't feel like a net loss overall. Because that's kind of a real downer. And the point of these stories that I'm writing is to get people excited to play Netrunner. And so, like, you know, I'm not going to write a story where, you know, HB rounds up a bunch of homeless people off the streets and puts them in a sewer with their kill droid a la Project Ares, and then they all just die, because that would be super depressing and no one would want to play the faction anymore. So it's a fine balance between the two of, like, how do I give them a challenge and have them succeed at that challenge, or rise to it at the very least without bumming everyone out about the kind of very real cyberpunk dystopia that we live in nowadays.
True. Yeah, it's interesting also in terms of I think most people playing Netrunner are opposed to cyberpunk dystopias, and yet 50% of our games, or if you look at my JNet logs lately, almost all of our games are playing as the Corp. Yeah.
And I love playing Corp. I in some ways I prefer it to playing Runner. And Argus was just so much fun, like just being a bully and like turn one, Data Raven, Oaktown Reno, advance. What are you going to do about it?
I think one of the things narratively, and I don't know if you agree with this, I feel like when I'm playing the Corp, mechanically, I'm a little baby and I'm just trying to do my best and I'm just trying to make my little plan work. And I keep on stacking these blocks and somebody comes to knock them over and I'm the good guy. And I feel like it's sometimes the biggest mechanical narrative flaw of Netrunner that a lot of corps are just trying their hardest to make it in a cool, in a cruel, unforgiving world of drip economy.
Well, I'm sure that's what it feels like for the people, you know, working at Monsanto or the people working at Exxon Valdez was the ship.
But Exxon was a...
Exxon is the company, yeah. I'm sure they're like, I'm just a guy with a job. It's not my fault.
Valid. All right. This is mainly an Ampere special podcast. Related to your other writing, was there something else about stuff you've written that you want to talk about? Anything that you want to plug or mention?
I guess, yeah, there's my writing blog, which is netrunnerconduit.tumblr.com it'll be in the show link.
Unless I forget to put it in again. Sorry, everybody. For people not familiar, Aaron writes some absolutely wonderful fiction. Actually, you started writing fiction on there in the Netrunner space before you started writing.
Before I repurposed it into my Netrunner Tumblr writing blog. And if you go back far enough, you'll get into some of my kind of dark horror writing. So I don't know, buyer beware, or reader beware, you're in for a scare. The last new story that's I've put up on it is about 9 months ago. I am really happy with that story, but mostly what I'm doing is just plugging my stories on that I've written for NSG. However, I am trying to, now that my transition surgeries are done, I want to start focusing on my career a bit more, career as a writer, career as an editor. So I'm not going to make any promises that I'm going to start updating it once a week, but hopefully I'll be writing a bit more in the future. So if you want to follow that and keep your eye on it, always.
If I can pay you another compliment, I think one thing that this is a fallacy I keep falling into. I did it with Liga, the illustrator, where, you know, she does all this wonderful cyber space art. And I was like, oh, wow, she's really good at drawing cyberspace. And then, she's doing other stuff with Wizards of the Coast and whatnot. And I'm like, oh, she's just good at drawing. And I think when I read stuff on The Conduit, I was thinking, wow, Aaron's really good at writing actually in cyberspace. Like, I think your depictions of runs just like felt very evocative and like exciting. And while also, you know, I recognize this from the game as well. Just like it worked in very well. And I think in retrospect, when I was thinking, oh, Aaron's very good at writing in cyberspace and writing the anatomy of a run. Really, you're just good at writing.
Thank you. For me, in Netrunner, in Netrunner and on the net and like in runs specifically, I think of that as almost like dream space, where things operate on kind of a dream logic level. So, you know, like Yugi blowing up the moon to win the game of Yu-Gi-Oh, that would fly for me in Netrunner.
Yeah. Relatedly, you also have a very nice, since we have already referenced the ShadowNet, you also had a very good appearance on the anime episode explaining all about anime. Thank you for that. I think I've touched on the things I wanted to ask about. Oh, no. Tell me if I can just ask one more question. Tell me about the experience of voice acting your story.
Yeah, that was fun. I wouldn't call myself bilingual, but I do speak French. So it was fun for me. I threw in a little extra French for that story. I don't know if you caught that. Well, we'll see if the readers or listeners, I suppose, catch that.
I don't think I noticed. I'll have to double check.
I also tried to do different voices for the characters. I mean, I wanted to have fun with it. I acted in high school. That's my best acting chops. But like, if you're just gonna read your story in like a monotone voice, I don't know. That doesn't seem. I would rather have someone else read it then. So I tried to put some emphasis and some voices into it.
Oh, I loved your performance.
Thank you.
Have you done voice acting before?
No. Well, yeah, no, I haven't done voice acting before. But part of my transition was voice training. And I did that for somewhere between 6 months and a year. It's hard for me to go back, but like, yeah, I drop here and then I have kind of a more masculine voice. But it's a hard space for me to find. And this is, it's really a matter of like muscle retraining. And this is where I'm comfortable speaking these days.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your story, for just being a wonderful member of this bigger Netrunner community, for you and for agreeing to do this podcast with us and for reading. I had asked you to read the story a while ago, and it's taken a while for us to get the episode together. You agreed to do this interview at the last minute for us to get in time for the episode. Thank you so much for that as well. Do you want any last words before we close out our interview?
Get excited for the next set that is coming out soon. The story is going to be very interesting, and I think a lot of people are not going to see where it's going.
Are you writing a piece for that?
I am. I'm writing a piece for the Wayland ID.
Oh, I'll have three corpses to play. That's wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. It was lovely talking to you. And,
thank you. Always a pleasure talking to you too, Sanjay.
And welcome to this interview segment. I'm joined here by Ginevra and our guest, Vale. Pronouns are he, him. And Vale is an online tournament organizer, especially that I really respect. He puts on some really good events, and we asked him on here specifically because of these two excellent tournaments that he's put on of Ampere versus Nova, where everybody only plays Ampere and Nova. Vale, anything you'd like to add to your intro there?
I'm very, very flattered and very happy to be here.
I was wondering about What inspired you actually to start the Nova and Ampere tournaments?
I suppose it was when they got spoiled during, when they got scooped during their respective scoop season, and it was clear that as new, like, you know, a lot of people were pretty excited to play with new neutral IDs, but their, you know, their power level is sort of half a step down from, you know, most of what you'll come up against in traditional standard. But when played against one another, they sort of, you approach like a sort of balance and get some really interesting games that you don't really get in the sort of regular standard environment. And I thought maybe other people would enjoy the opportunity to play, you know, five or so rounds of just Nova versus Ampere.
Now, Ginevra and I have both played in these tournaments, but do you mind talking about sort of, you know, how the tournaments have gone, how people, what people's reactions were, what kind of games people were having?
Sure. Yeah, people's reactions seem broadly positive. People seem to enjoy it. The sort of the one piece of negative feedback I got out of the first one was that every runner deck had endurance in it, but the standard bandits team took care of that for us. And it was interesting to see the sort of public perception, or ahead of time what we predicted would happen in terms of side balance, and what was happening more on the results table. I heard from a lot of people and thought myself that the sort of when you got to the high levels of play, that the runner's basic action card would just dominate the game. But in the first couple of tournaments so far, it hasn't seemed to be so much the case that the runner just wins. and there's been a bit more deck building creativity than I expected when it comes to building Ampere. There's not a lot. I think me and a lot of other people thought that we would just get a lot of these fast advanced decks and just play all the best 3/2s, all the best most unstealable 5/3s, and all the best fast advanced tools to just score out in that fashion. But particularly in the first of the Nova Ampere events, we saw a lot of these, like, just all the most heinous, annoying, damagey cards packed into one sort of shell. And then we even saw someone entering playing those big decks.
Yeah, guilty. I did play as big of a deck as possible with Ampere, which is only 94 cards. It's
not that
very
big.
Streamlined.
Gosh.
Vale, do you play Ampere much? What decks do you favor, if you do?
To be honest, I haven't ever. I've put on the events, but I haven't played in them myself. I did like a spot of deck building because I feel like sometimes, like when people are like really fresh, they want to play in the event but don't really know what to build or how to build like a deck that's going to be reasonable. So when I put on a couple of events in the past, I like just threw together a handful of like example deck lists. So I've done a little bit of deck building in Ampere Nova, just trying to build like, you know, a completely reasonable fast advance Ampere, a completely reasonable like asset based sort of Ampere, but I haven't actually taken any into a match before.
Hmm. What did you find on the Nova side? Were there archetypes that you weren't expecting to come up, or?
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of creativity in the deck building space. I didn't see many Novas who'd built into a really wacky archetype that I hadn't conceived would be, you know, possible before. But there are certainly a lot of people who are playing sort of not just all the best stuff Reg Nova, which is kind of what I expected most people to play when given, you know, the best cards out of every faction at their disposal. But sometimes people look at that and go, I'm really going to play, you know, Tunnel Vision. Like, people come up with stuff.
I think I did see somebody who leaned really heavily into the viruses and did a really nice virus synergy deck. I think what you said about if you put enough Netrunner players with deck building constraints, they're going to come up with some fresh takes.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I think we alluded to this. This is not the first online tournament you've put on. I think you first got sort of on my radar, putting on quite a few sort of in the lead up to World, into one of the World's tournaments, especially focusing on, hey, not everybody can get to Worlds that easily. I'm going to put on online tournament. Can you talk a little bit about your history of making online tournaments?
Sure. Netrunner is the first game I've been a TO in, and I sort of decided to try my hand at it during the pandemic because we had a fairly active Slack channel and Discord channel, and people were, everyone was stuck at home. People were talking about Netrunner, but a lot of people weren't playing in things. So I'd played in a handful of events at ungodly hours. I went to one of the Aldershot GNK events put on by Swifty at, I can't remember what time of day it was, but not a great one for Australians to attend. But there just wasn't a lot happening in the way of online events in the Australian time zone. So I tried my hand at that and had a great time and put on a couple of those. And then once the sort of lockdown restrictions started to ease and return to paper play happened sort of 2021-ish, my local scene picked up a couple of the TOs who'd been putting on events pre-pandemic, sort of started putting them back on again. But, yeah, not a lot was happening in terms of online play still at that point. So I sort of continued ever so often putting on these sorts of online events that suited Australian time zones, because there's a lot of people from other countries who really benefit from that sort of time zone getting a bit more love. We have players in New Zealand. We have players in Singapore. Who can all make it to these events. And I had, had put on quite a few asynchronous events as well, which are sort of, time zone agnostic in a way. Both of those Nova Ampere events, of course, have been asynchronous just to try and get as many people into these events as possible. I think one of the things that's been one of the not secrets per se, but one of the reasons some of my events have been reasonably successful is the sort of model of making them asynchronous with no entry fee, and letting people swap their deck lists in between weeks for these sorts of not so competitive events, and yet I feel like that sort of rule set does a fairly good job of retaining the number of players week to week, getting people excited to play whatever format you've put them into, and not so many. Just trying to minimize the number of people who drop in round five, sort of that sort of dynamic.
That makes a lot of sense. I think I was about to ask what advice you might have, or what somebody who's thinking about organizing their own online tournaments might want to have in mind. And I think that speaks to that pretty well. Any other thoughts on advice you'd want to give aspiring online tournament organizer?
I suppose I would say do it for sure. If there's some aspect of running an event that you're worried about, we have a fantastic community with plenty of TOs who'll be happy to help you out or ease any of those concerns. Another thing that's a great thing to keep in mind is sort of making sure there's a reason people will want to play in your event. Sounds silly, but having some sort of draw for your event, be it if you're putting on an online circuit opener, that can be enough of a draw in of itself sometimes with that invite on the line. But yeah, if you're going to put on an event, I definitely say to have a think about what your draw is, what's going to bring people in, and why are people going to be excited to play in your event.
I've also really liked the titles you've given to some of the events, like the Antarctic Continentals? That was really fun.
Yeah, I can't remember whose joke that was originally, but yeah, I put on an event around Continentals 2022, I think, and went, well, there's one more continent unaccounted for at least. But yeah, giving them catchy names and giving them some sort of graphic banner has been good, I think, for sort of getting them out there and getting people to sort of read the details of your event. I think my last one, I had a local artist, Asphyxia, did a really nice banner for me, which I'm very grateful for.
Before we started recording, both you and Ginevra talked a little bit about how important online organizing is, specifically to Australian Netrunner players. Would I guess both of you be willing to talk a little bit on that?
Sure. I suppose like any region where the sort of player hubs are quite spaced out, you end up with a lot of sort of isolation, I suppose, in that regard. Lots of player islands where you don't get a lot of crossover and overlap. And there are plenty of people in those little player islands who can't really make it to the regular meetups. I know, like, the local meetup here is on a weeknight, a bit over an hour away from me, so I really can't make it for the normal week-to-week play. So I can only really make it out for tournaments on weekends. And there are plenty of players in sort of more remote situations than that, certainly. So having the option of online play, I think, is really, it certainly is, like, for a lot of players, online play is the only play they sort of have the luxury of. So making sure that the online scene is always catered to, I think, is really important, especially with some regions being, like, significantly stranded. I know the player base in New Zealand isn't what it used to be, so a lot of my events that I've put on have been attended by, and a lot of events have been hosted and judged by MB Kelly from New Zealand, who's a real boon to the online scene. And I think there's a lot of players in those sorts of situations where online is their only option, and I think it's good that a lot of effort goes into making it a very appealing option.
Yeah. I guess I could say I'm an online player. That's the majority of the way I play, and in all of the tournaments that are available sort of in my time zone. I missed a few in the last year, but like I've really tried hard to make whatever I can because that's my outlet, and I find I'm more interested in practicing or like just playing when it's a lead up to a tournament. So having online tournaments has just been amazing. And yeah, they're really vital when people are spread out. There's some Netrunner players I know that they're in a remote part of Australia, and it's hard to describe what remote parts of Australia are like if you're in a different situation where cities are very close to each other or it's easy to travel, but it's not easy for them to travel. So the online scene is really, really important.
Yeah, and another thing I heard is, like what you were saying, Vale, is that not only having online tournaments in general, but just having them for your time zone or at a time that makes sense for your time zone, where you're not staying up until 4 in the morning to play in a CO in a circuit opener is really nice.
Yeah, definitely helps quite a bit. And another thing I really like about having the sort of thriving online scene that we have is getting that cross-pollination of sort of players, getting exposed to like world-class players from all the regions, rather than just the online play where you're sort of, you know, the best player you play against is going to be the best player in your, you know, 3-hour radius, versus showing up to one of these online events, getting into round one, and you're against, you know, last year's world top 16 competitor. You go, okay, let's see how this goes. Sort of that, yeah, that exposure I think is really nice.
Yeah, that's an absolutely amazing experience. And yeah, something that I really value about tournaments is getting to play against top players, even if I'm not traveling to Worlds or something like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Vale, for coming on to talk to us about your tournament organizing, and also thank you for organizing those. Thank you for organizing a lot of your tournaments. They've been excellent. Yes.
Thanks very much.
Anything you want to add before we close out?
If anyone's interested in the idea of playing in an online asynchronous Nova vs. Ampere type event, given we've now in an environment where Sunset has just released as an alternative format, and Startup has gotten a bit of a rejuvenation through a ban list, I'm not planning to put one on in the immediate future, but definitely I'll be looking to get another one going not too long after the release of the next set. Cool. I'm toying around with getting into the laser alt art scene, and I've been playing with the idea of having the next Nova Ampere Async being one with the option of, so the same as always, with no entry fee and just a prize for first place finisher, but with the option of when signing up, buying in to get a participation sort of double-sided Nova Ampere wooden laser altar.
Ooh.
And
that could be very cool.
See how that goes.
I am joined now by Phil, a.k.a. Xeroth Maxima, pronounce he, him. Phil is the host of the ShadowNet, the only host, if you believe the lore of the ShadowNet. One of two delightful hosts, if you listen to the ShadowNet and know what's up. Thanks for joining me, Phil.
Oh, thanks for having me. I gotta say, I'm a fan of the ShadowNet lore, so...
Yeah, I'm trying not to break kayfabe, but I didn't know how to properly introduce you. But you are a host of the ShadowNet. That is certainly true.
I would say that's accurate. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really lovely podcast.
Thank you. I feel like it's all right. It's all right. You know,
it's
we just
really
do it.
Good.
We try to have fun and we put it out there eventually.
I think one thing I really appreciate about the ShadowNet, not only are you putting out really good episodes, but every once in a while in the feed, you'll be like, this is some audio that I found that is useful for the Netrunner community. I'm going to put it out there. I forget the last time you did this, but I think there was just somebody's like really good analysis of something. And
yes, if you make Netrunner content and people are like, oh, I wish this was audio only. Literally, it only takes one person to say, hey, put this on the ShadowNet feed, and I will put it up there for the listening audiences.
Now, nominally, I asked you on here because I love talking to you and I want to plug the ShadowNet and everything you're doing. But nominally, I asked you on here to talk about, because this is the Ampere special episode, the ShadowNet bake-off. And
yes.
Actually, very quite rudely asked you to come on here to talk about me.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite Bake Off participants. No one sends like a real ruse cruise of a bake like Sanjay. Let me tell you. From the first one, you never knew what to expect.
Yeah, I believe the first one I just made a root beer float.
with pepperoni on it.
Yeah, I got it. Was a Wayland. It was a Wayland
themes. Yeah,
they're all about correct. The meat.
Yeah, so you got to have the pepperoni, obviously.
And I, you know, routinely get judged pretty poorly in the competition because I'm not a very good baker. Fair, valid.
You got heart, and that counts for something.
Now,
how do you feel about your chances this year?
Better now. Before we recorded this, we discovered that despite me having submitted an entry and waiting just with bated breath for the episode to drop so I could hear what you thought of my and my partner's entry, you all had not received it. So,
And this is my fear every year because people send it all sorts of way, email, Slack, Discord messages. 1 year I had a Google Sheet and I didn't know how to use Google Sheets. And I was like, I guess no one submitted. And someone was like, oh, I definitely submitted on there.
Yeah. But I do think now that judges know about my entry, it's probably better shot.
I think the way we're judging them this year, coming in last, I think you got an advantage.
Now, let's take a step back and just talk about what is Bake Off.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So some people are familiar with the Great British Bake Off. I've watched a couple. It's fine. It's okay. There's like a Canadian version that's like way tackier. I'm a fan of that one. They go into a tent in Toronto instead of somewhere in the English countryside. And they try to be nice to each other. It's great. It's good TV, wholesome for everyone. And I was watching some of these shows and I was like, it'd be really fun to use my audio only medium to do something like this. And I don't really remember what the situation was with the first one. I think there was a set being delayed. It was supposed to be like around Christmas and then it got delayed to the new year. And I'm like, let's do something fun, you know, keep the community engaged. So myself, Ed, and Eric kind of workshopped it. And just did it. At first, I think it was just the three of us. Maybe there was community entries the first year. I don't remember.
I forget whether I submitted the...
I think everyone. Yeah, I think it was mostly us three competing against each other for like the sake of keeping it coherent. And I said, hey, if you want to participate, you know, send something in. They're still out there. I'll send you the links. You can add the links to the show notes. It's fun to see what people baked off. But... there's been some like amazing cakes submitted. Like that first year had a dinosaurus cake that was just like,
oh yeah,
it was just dinosaurus, and it was also cake. I'm pretty sure that one went. Did it light up? Maybe there was a light on it. I don't remember.
I do enjoy that the Bake Off is a competition in which the judges also participate, and the way that you deal with bias that might come in there is just the knowledge that there's people that are way more talented, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, this year I had high hopes, but it really fell apart, which, you know, it happens in the kitchen. The pressure's on.
This year was an exciting prompt. It was sort of inspired by, like, is it cake type stuff where you're trying to fool the judges.
And let me tell you, we got fooled this year.
Yeah,
People are amazing at baking.
Yeah, you even thought that we didn't submit anything, where we actually did. That's another layer
you of fooled me.
On there. Now, last year, I believe, I, despite my lack of cooking skills, got second place in a cooking competition, in a Netrunner competition, I think. I think this is a format of Netrunner with Empire.
Look, if Netrunner Dream Crush is an official format, Bake Off is also.
It is.
It's gotta be. I was thinking about this. I was like, next year, it's gonna be on Always Be Running. That's gonna be the easiest way to find it. But yes, you did come in second with your Un Père Pain Perdu, I think it was.
Yeah, I was sad to hear that. So it was trying to do a pun with Un Père Perdu, and pain perdu, but apparently that's not what they call French toast in Canada.
Well, I don't know. At least that's not what I call it. I've always called it pain doré, which is just gold toast, which sounds fancy. You know, lost toast or lost bread.
Yeah, it's what Peter Pan probably eats all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I loved your vision of it. If I can recount it as best I could, you just took all sorts of bits of bread and bread-like substances and kind of made a casserole, a French toast casserole out of it. And it looked delicious.
It was really good. Yeah. It was also, I think, vegan because I was trying to feed it to my baby who is allergic to dairy. And yeah, we just had a bunch of different kinds of milk, a bunch of different kinds of bread, just like an Empire deck.
One of everything. Made sense. Yeah.
And I probably would have done even better until you submitted it to a judge who was actually like, this is not well baked.
We historically have had some harsh judges, but that's part of the experience. You know, what's one loss with Ampere? That's nothing. You keep going.
I mean, a second
place. You grind out those wins.
That's impressive. I mean, Bjorken has a second place in a world championship as well. That's a good
company.
There you
go. Yeah. Can't complain.
So I guess if I can say one more thing about Bake Off, if you are listening, dear listener, please check out old episodes of Bake Off. Check out, in general, the Shadow Net. It's really lovely. And tune in soon to...
It's a race. It's a race. I just got the final piece of it yesterday. So I'm editing it tonight, possibly tomorrow. Maybe it's out this week. Maybe it's out next week. I don't know when this is coming out, but it's a race.
Exciting. Now, you have some other accomplishments in the Netrunner sphere. Other collaborations between the two of us, actually. One thing that people may not know about you and may not know about me is that we, despite not being avid writers, have written a lot of the quotes that pop up on Jinteki.net when a game starts.
Yes.
How did we get roped into that?
I think the JNet devs at the time were just asking for help and saying, hey, we need people to come write stuff. And then there was a bunch of people. A lot of people contributed.
Yeah.
But eventually there was a lot of IDs to write prompts for. And at some point it was just you and me.
Yeah, I think the distinction that we had was not being the best writers, not being the best, definitely not being the best coders. I don't know how to code.
Oh no. I can. But I hate it. Which is not maybe something I should say in the Netrunner world, because there's a lot of coding happening. But look, it's not for me.
Yeah. But we stuck around. And so when we were like, oh, we need a bunch more of these written, we just kind of wrote them.
Yeah. I remember, and we couldn't finish them. It was such a slog. And then I think you had the bright idea. I'm attributing this to you. You told me, Phil, we're getting on a stream, so we have an audience, which will force us to finish our project.
And it worked.
Genius. It worked. It worked.
Yeah, I guess since then we have not been keeping up. There's a nice initiative in Green Level Clearance that we have not been supporting as well as we should. Yeah, so if you ever look at... Jinteki.net and it says no quote, sorry.
That's because we didn't write one. Yeah, we are sorry, but also I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done, I'll be honest. Someone else, valid. Please. Yeah. Bother the GLC mods and they'll put you in the secret channel for writing JNet quotes.
Yeah. I think we'd love to
get in there.
I think I need to be supporting them better in terms of getting it to happen. If you were to write a quote for Ampere, what would it be?
So Ampere's French. Maybe.
Yeah. Yes.
Somewhat. Ampere is a measure of current.
Also true.
One of two agendas per faction. Maybe a play on the one of, maybe something like trying to achieve the singularity, something like that, you know? Like, you know, yeah, there's something there, huh?
I like it.
Like, what we had like this formula, like it, the corp establishes a threat and then addresses it.
Yes.
With a show of force, something like this has been years since we did this.
Yeah, we had a formula that we didn't always follow and also didn't communicate well to other people. So if you've been on JNet and you've read these quotes, you probably can't guess what the formula is. But there,
what's a rule if you can't break it, you know?
Yeah, I think we were trying to make it so that the corp would like be aware of the runner but not know who they are, because that's
but sometimes a little bit because it changes by faction.
Yeah.
So yeah, for Ampere maybe what about something like just one runner? What are they in the face of singularity? Boom. Done.
Just maybe just like translate singularity to French and then it'll be
singularité. It's just singularity, but you put a little accent on the E.
Perfect, perfect.
There you go. Done. Print it. JNet devs, load it up.
Totally ignoring the really nice lore that Shoeflower has written for Ampere.
Oh, that was very good. Yeah. But you know, that's the nice thing about making your own lore. Yeah, you could just say other stuff.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. In doing that, we were trying to be respectful to canon, but also we're like, whatever happens, happens.
Did we sneak in some Sunny slash fic in there? Maybe.
You just have to play enough Sunny games to find out.
You gotta play enough Sunny versus HB, and maybe you'll find out.
I wrote some. I really like the Sunny stuff. I think I wrote the stuff about the hats.
Very good.
I really like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good. We did a great job on that one.
Thank you. Well, Phil, thank you for coming on to talk about the great stuff that I've done. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for talking to you. It's great times.
Yeah. I hope you have me on your podcast to talk about more math with Ob. I really enjoyed that feature.
We did do that. I'm like, I can't remember. I feel like I've had Sanjay on the ShadowNet, but like, I can't recall which episode, which is fine because I have a terrible memory. But we did do the Ob math episode.
I just like talking to my friends, and if it's recorded, that's really lovely. Congratulations on continuing to be the reigning queen ant as long as continue to not recognize that at most tournaments.
Important. Yes. Throw your name in and do things wrong. Sometimes
I was so sad about this. Phil, at when we were crowning Queen Bee, Phil was registered and he was doing really well. And only after I looked into it, I found out that he in fact did not have a B card. He had he had Formicary, which is an ant card, and at the time that was not on the ant list. Or on the B list, even though ants and bees are closely related.
And I think Morgan won. This was Worlds last year.
Yeah.
And we were very close.
Yeah, I think you did better than Morgan.
It was like two spots higher than Morgan. It was like nothing. It was nothing. Anyways, I lost it all. It's fine. Sanjay sent me this delightful ant pin, which I have on my recording microphone.
Yeah, if you're listening really closely, you can hear it.
Yeah, I might tinkle off there. I don't know.
All right. Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on your Ampere episode. I'm excited to hear what the other, I don't know, segments, onesies of the Ampere are.
It should be pretty good. I mean, we had to have a lot of different things. Usually we just have one guest, you know, for the whole thing, but since it's Ampere, we had to have a lot of different
little micro little tidbits of one of everything. Yeah. All right. Happy Ampere. Bye.
Hello and welcome to the Rules Corner. We are joined by Cephalopod Wizard, he, him. Cephalopod Wizard, I'm so glad you're here on our Ampere special. I've been worried about something. Like, I really want to play Ampere as much as I can, but I have a rules worry. Because
tell me your worries.
Yeah. What if, so, you know, Ampere plays a lot of out of faction agendas, right? And you're not allowed to do that usually, but no. Ampere can. And I'm just worried, what if I go to a tournament and my opponent plays direct access on me, and then they call a judge and I get disqualified from the tournament for an illegal deck?
Well, let's read the card text. First off, Ampere, your deck cannot include more than one copy of any card, and your deck may include two different agendas from each corp faction. So initially, we are allowed to play two agendas from every faction. But what is this direct access? What are they doing to us? It says, while you are resolving this event, each player's identity loses all abilities.
Right, so I'm worried they're going to call a judge mid-run and get me.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, the answer is no, you do not lose the game. This restriction and these abilities are there only for deck building. The fact that your identity is blank does not make you vulnerable to losing the game to one particular card.
Oh, that's a relief. Thank you.
And in fact, this is a question that we've had in the past, because this is just the professor in a trench coat. The professor is this identity that says the first copy of each program in this deck does not count against your influence limit, but he only has one influence. So if the runner catches you with a program that costs more than one influence and they play Cerebros, I'm sorry, if the corp catches you with a more expensive program and they play Cerebral Static, which is an operation that says the runner's identity loses its abilities. And FFG clearly decided, no, that would be silly. We can't have you lose the game because of that.
And you haven't overridden that as the rules team?
No. No, we think FFG got that one right.
Oh, well, that's a real relief. Now, Cephalopod Wizard, you also came up with a question from a rules Ampere standpoint that might actually be more relevant. It's maybe only relevant for Ampere on a theoretical standpoint, depending on what future cards they print, but might actually be relevant for another ID.
That's right. Similar to Ampere, we have the runner counterpart, Nova, who has just the ability limit, or you cannot play, I'm sorry, your deck cannot include more than one copy of any card, but Nova is a infinite influence deck. However, there exist some runner cards that say limit 6 per deck. So now we have these two conflicting ideas. Can I have one copy of this card or can I have 6? And we even printed a neutral breaker, Matryoshka, that says limit 6 per deck in the same set. And it needs to have multiple copies to function. And people asked, which one of these wins? Surely they wouldn't print a neutral runner and a neutral AI breaker that can't be used by that runner. And I have news for you. We did. I'm sorry. Because the way that this works out is there's a principle of can't beats can. So if one ability says you can do something and another one says you can't, the restriction wins. So in this case, even though Matryoshka says limit 6, you can only play one copy of Matryoshka in Nova decks.
Well, that's really helpful. So this rules corner has been really helpful to me because, one, I've learned I can go to a tournament and not worried about being disqualified when my opponent plays direct access on me. And now I know there's no real reason for me to hold out until they print a corp limit 6 per deck card to make my Ampere deck more consistent.
That's right. Nova will be up to something, but we don't know what.
Well, thank you so much, Cephalopod Wizard. It's been wonderful having you on this Rules Corner.
Thank you.
And now for the news. It has been an exciting time. There's been a lot of things dropping since we last talked to you. Of note, there is now a startup ban list. The Endurance and Drago Avanov were added to the ban list for startup. There's a very nice article on the Null Signal Games website talking about the rationale for that. In other news, the Ashes Remastered Edition is available for pre-order and is going to be released on February 12th. Also, just dropped applications to run a national championship for 2024. So if you're a tournament organizer, please apply. It's a big commitment, but we'd love to support you running your nationals. Also in the news, we had the announcement of the Sunset format, which is a sort of variant on standard, looking forward to future rotations, sort of experimenting with what a standard format would be like without certain key cards. So if you're interested in brewing, check that out. In terms of upcoming tournaments, I believe a few weekends from now, there will be an accelerated meta test tournament in the Sunset format. If this gets out early enough, there are also there's an accelerated meta test tournament in Standard. And on the weekend of the February 3rd, there's also Ocarina 6 tournament format that I started where you get to play as either a unique connection or a agenda as your runner in corp. So you're not playing with standard identities. You play with weird identities. It's a lot of fun. Don't know if this episode will get out in time, but if you're interested, the information is on Always Be Running. Speaking of alwaysberunning.net, there's also a lot of circuit openers coming up just in the next few weeks. We've got circuit openers in Wien, Austria, Berlin, in Germany, Tampere, Finland, Torzo, Poland. There's a online circuit opener that GLC, Green Level Clearance, is putting on. In the U.S., there's a circuit opener in North Carolina and in Gastonia and in California and San Diego. Quite a lot of tournaments coming up. So definitely, if you're interested in playing some Netrunner, always head on over to alwaysberunning.net. In terms of some recent events that are, I was thinking it'd be nice to highlight, we had a very large tournament put on right at the beginning of the year called New Year's Showdown, which was a circuit opener as well, put on by Man in the Moon. And it was huge. There was 64 people in attendance, and congratulations to I believe Janktivist for taking that down. Also, in terms of, that was not even the biggest tournament we had, because we had our Circuit Breaker Invitational. So everyone who won Circuit Opener, people who won some other tournaments, got invited to this. And it was a huge turnout, over 100 people. The winner was the entity known as Jan Tuno. Congratulations. And that was the news. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode, for this Ampere special. A little bit of a variation from our normal format. I hope you liked it. I look forward to you joining us again next time. Thank you so much for having us in your ears and in your hearts. Good night.